on May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere. This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For about the past year or so now, I've had Art of Manliness readers reach out, tweet me, and tell me about this book called Underground Strength by a fella named Zach Evanish. Finally picked up a copy, checked it out, and it's awesome. It's all about tires and using stones and, you know, deadlifts, just really basic strength training that resonates with me. I can see why I resonate with a lot of Art of Manliness readers and listeners. So I had to have Zach on the podcast, discuss his philosophy towards strength training, and talk about his book, Underground Strength. I think you're really going to like this. A lot of great actionable takeaways from this that you can start using today and incorporate into your own strength and conditioning routines. So Zach Evanish, let's do this. Zach Evanish, welcome to the show.
Great. I'm excited to be here.
All right. So you wrote this book called Underground Strength. That's sort of like this underground cult classic. I've had a whole bunch of Art of Manliness readers tell me about it. So before we get there, let's talk about the story of how you got into weight training. Because you talk a lot about the underground strength training. How you got into weight training is actually really interesting. You started off as sort of a bodybuilder, right?
Yeah. So I've kind of been through the different stages of, if we put in general terms of fitness. So I began training in 1989. I was just finishing up eighth grade, so a long time ago. And even before that, you know, my brother would always lift weights in his room. He had an old Joe Weider bench from Sears. He had sand-filled weights. And I would go and I would try to work out, and it would last for a few workouts, and then I would stop and start again. And that was throughout middle school, sixth, seventh grade. And I remember in seventh grade, like, questioning myself, saying, you know, what's wrong with me? Why can't I stay committed to working out? You know, is this something wrong with me? I was 12 years old at the time, questioning, you know, if I had some sort of like unique problem that other 12-year-old kids have or don't have. And in the last few weeks of school of eighth grade, I started working out regularly in my brother's room, and I opened up for not the first time. This was a gift from our grandfather, the Encyclopedia of Modern Bodybuilding from Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I just started following those workouts. And I remember exercising at the beginning, something like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then it became a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. And I remember after two or three weeks, I was like, holy crap, I love this. I'm not stopping like I used to stop. And then, not long into the summer, I remember having like shirt sleeves cut off, and a girl in the neighborhood was like, oh my God, look at these biceps. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I had arrived.
That's awesome.
So that was the my beginning in training, and all the information back in the late 80s, the early 90s, not all of it, but really the stuff that was coming across my eyes as far as magazines and books was, you know, very much what I call the pretty boy bodybuilding scene. There wasn't all this talk of compound lifts and squatting and deadlifting and doing power cleans. You just didn't come across articles like that. Although now I have a lot of old magazines from the 50s, the 60s, and even some magazines from the 80s where they had feature articles from Dr. Ken Leisner, who was one of the earlier proponents and students of Arthur Jones, who created Nautilus and the high-intensity training. And he had articles that I wish I had come across, because he had articles of college football players, NFL football players, his sons talking about how he would get them to eat, things like sending them to school with 12 tuna sandwiches and saying, you know, the rule is you don't come home with these sandwiches and you don't give them away. So you find a way to eat them. And he had pictures of the boys using anvils and odd objects and, you know, welded gas containers for farm walk implements. And I say, wow, that's the stuff I wish I came across. So, you know, I was a bodybuilder in my earlier days, and I was influenced in the wrong ways. So as a high school wrestler, I looked very strong and imposing, but I didn't have, you know, the performance that was required to be successful as an athlete. And not, and even on a deeper level, it didn't really train me mentally to be tough, to be confident, to have, you know, that instinct where I felt like I was prepared for battle, because my training was perfect. You know, I would go to the gym. It was always isolation exercises, lots of machines and cables. So that, you know, I learned the hard way that, yes, that stuff makes you look good, but it doesn't help your performance, physical or mental. So, you know, I've been training since 1989 and I haven't stopped. So that's, I'm 39 now, so 26 years of training.
Yeah, I thought your story kind of reminded me of mine, because I started weightlifting too when I was in eighth grade, and I got the Joe Weider bench. I think I got it at like Service Merchandise. Do you remember Service Merchandise?
I think I've heard of those. I mean, we had like Woolworths.
Yeah.
We had independent sporting goods stores here. You know, in New Jersey, there's a lot of malls.
Yeah.
And my brother, you know, would always save up money. He was a bus boy. Then I was a bus boy. I remember we were bussing tables. I was in sixth grade. And he would always save his money and spend it on gym equipment. I remember he, I think I wrote about that in the book. He had us go to the sporting goods store at the mall, where we had to ride our bikes across a pretty busy, very busy highway. And I remember riding my bike back with the 20 pounds, the 10 pound plates in my book bag, and I just couldn't keep up with him. So he really inspired me to be strong. But I think I've heard of that store. I mean,
yeah, it was like one of these weird things. You went in there and then like you picked out what you wanted, and you had to like call this phone, and like they would like bring it up on a conveyor belt. I remember I was just really excited because it took me like a couple months to save up for it.
Yes.
And then I set up in the garage, and like, yeah, I found like this like book from the 70s that my dad had that had some like lifts, you know, some sumo lifts and bench press. And
right.
And it was like, it was awesome. I mean, I really wasn't pulling, you know, pushing much weight or pulling much weight, but it scratched that itch, and it began something that I still continue to this day.
Yeah. I wish, you know, I have a lot of books and I save them all so I could pass them on to my son, because I don't know what circle of, you know, fads or gimmicks will come around next in the fitness world. And I want him to, you know, that was obviously also a big inspiration behind the book, was I wanted something that my kids would be proud of. But I have some very, very old books from early 1900s of strength training, as well as old magazines from, like I mentioned, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. And back then, you know, they were titled appropriately so. The magazine was Strength and Health, or Health and Strength, and they had a blend of, you know, training that actually was good for your health and made you strong. So there was a lot of you know, basic bodybuilding movements, powerlifting. There was a lot of Olympic weightlifting in these books, gymnastic drills, and real simple, straightforward stuff, no BS. And, you know, I want my son to read that stuff as well as my daughter. I want them to see that versus the stuff that's kind of teaching them that it's 6 weeks to this, you know, 30 days to that, because, you know, as you said, you've been training since eighth grade. So over half our lives, or, you know, well over half our lives, you know, 2/3 of my life I've been exercising for, and it's not a 30 day or 6 week, you know, shortcut. It's a it's a everyday, all the time, you know, all in process.
Yeah. I collect some of those old fitness magazines as well. Yeah. I'm surprised like how strong those bodybuilders were, right? They were like genuinely strong, and like, yeah, the emphasis on gymnastics was always really, it's always really surprising to see, like, you know, you need to do a handstand.
Yeah.
Right. This was before 50 years before CrossFit, where you know, people are doing handstands, but like they were doing it back in the golden age of bodybuilding.
Right. They did. That's what, you know, Muscle Beach was. It was, they had the weight pit, and then they had all the gymnastic rings. They still have the traveling rings. They had the parallel bars. And even inside Arnold's encyclopedia, he talks about like his conditioning. He would ride his bike. He would sprint. He would swim out in the ocean. So even the big guys were doing that. And Dave Draper has spoken about that lots and lots of times. And that stuff always inspires me, because they weren't closed-minded. They weren't one-sided. Yes, they were big, but they also wanted to have the performance aspect. And I thought that was something that is just, I love that.
Yeah. All right. So you started lifting in your eighth grade, but then this Jersey kid, you, became a bodybuilding champion in Israel. How did that happen? That's kind of a weird story.
Yeah.
There.
So I was born in Israel, and my family, we moved here. We moved to New York. We moved to the States when I was just shy of a year. My parents always tell me that I learned to walk on the plane here. So we moved. We lived in the Bronx for about 4 years, and then we moved to New Jersey. And you know, as I said, started getting into the bodybuilding, and that's what I fell in love with. I would look at these magazines and read them, and I purchased every book from the bookstores back when, long before the internet was out, back when people did buy from bookstores. And bodybuilding was just, I feel like bodybuilding and lifting weights saved my life. You know, I talk about in the book how I started going through bouts of depression. And I was, at the time, you know, started competing in bodybuilding. I was a freshman. It was the summer before sophomore year in college. So I just finished my freshman year in college. And every couple of years, we would go back to Israel to visit my grandparents. And my brother was in the Israeli military at the time, and he was telling me that there's this guy who owns the small gym now in town. Back then, there would be, I mean, you could not find a gym in Israel. I would just go do 20 sets of pull-ups every other day the years before it had, going to Israel. But there was a gym there, and I went to that gym, and it was very, very small. I mean, it must have been like 500 square feet, 550 square feet, super small. The owner saw me, and I was 18 back at the time. And my brother introduced me to him, and he saw me and said, he goes, "You have to compete in this teenage Mr. Israel." It was called the Young Mr. Israel, 18 and under. And he's like, "It's in a couple of weeks." He saw me, you know, I had a tank top on. He's like, "You need to compete." And I was going through this bout of depression, just really just broken down. And I was like, "Nah, I don't think I want to do it. I don't think I'm ready." And every day I'd show up at the gym and I would train. And he would ask me over and over, and I'd kept saying no, no. And then one day, one night at home, I remember I'm at my grandparents, and I'm just thinking to myself, like, what the hell? Like, I've always read all these bodybuilding magazines. I read Arnold's Education of a Bodybuilder hundreds of times. I mean, I memorized the book, and I wanted to live that experience of competing. And you know, how he broke out of the Austrian military, broke over the fence to compete in the Young Mr. Europe or the Junior Mr. Europe. And I remember saying to myself, like, is this what you're going to do? You're going to be an excuse maker. You're going to be weak. You're not going to challenge yourself. And I remember I just said to myself, that's it. It's time to change. Time to, you know, be a strong person. So the next morning I went to the gym. And I remember the day or two before that, the gym owner, Avner, said, "I'm going to give you one more chance. I'm going to ask you one more time." He had been asking me for 2 weeks. And I remember I got to the gym, and there was nobody in the gym. And he was just sitting there. It seemed like he was just waiting all day. I got there that night, late at night. I would usually get there. And he's like, "Okay, last chance. You're going to do this or not? And I said, yes, I'm going to compete. And he's like, that's it. Let's train right now. And then we trained together. It was myself, the gym owner, and this guy, Joe, who was a former Army paratrooper. And he was trying to get into the Israeli SEAL team. And the three of us wound up training. It was like 2 weeks leading up to it. But we would train twice a day all the time. I mean, it was just super intense. It was amazing. And I went on to win the Young Mr. Israel. And there was like about 20 kids competing. And it was amazing. We competed most bodybuilding shows are inside a high school theater, maybe a college theater, right? This was in an amphitheater. I mean, it was friggin' amazing. The stars, the sky was open. It just blew me away. So I competed, and I was age 18, and I won the young Mr. Israel. This was 1994.
Okay, that's a long time ago. All right, so you jumped from bodybuilding, then you did a stint with mixed martial arts. How did that happen?
Yeah, so I was, the Young Mr. Israel, the next year I also competed a couple times, and I took first place and second place in a few bodybuilding shows, natural bodybuilding shows, one of them. And after that is when I graduated college. I became a teacher, and I kind of was getting that itch to kind of defeat my inner demons. I was a high school wrestler and super disappointed in my performance as a high school wrestler, especially with the work I put into it. And as I got older, I started developing just a different sense of confidence. I mean, I was feeling like a man. I wasn't afraid to go out and battle anybody on a wrestling mat. And I was like, man, I'm ready. I was coaching wrestling at the time. I was coaching at a middle school, high school. And I was also, an adjunct at a community college, an adjunct professor. And I remember I met up with the wrestling coach and wrestled with some of the guys, and I took it to him. And I was like, man, I could wrestle anybody. So at the time, it wasn't called mixed martial arts. It was called NHB, no holds barred fighting. And a lot of the dominant fighters were college wrestlers, old college wrestlers. I mean, it was guys like, of course, I'm forgetting the name. Mark Kerr, guys, a lot of these Ohio State wrestlers, Kevin Randleman, Mark Coleman. I mean, they were the ground and pound guys. This is the early 90s. Oh, no, late 90s. So I'm looking, and I find a place online. And it was a place about 25 minutes away, inner city, called they were teaching shoot fighting. Shoot fighting was like open palm strikes. It was what they were doing a lot in Japan. So I went to that place and started getting involved with Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu. And there wasn't a whole lot of instruction. I mean, it was more like show up and just you're going to wrestle, you're going to box. Anybody who's there is there to fight. And started doing that. And started getting really into it. And there was, I didn't compete in any kind of striking fights, but I competed in like the earlier days of the Grappler's Quest Nationals. I mean, today there could be probably 100 people competing in your weight class. When I competed, I think there was like 8 of us or 12 of us. And I had a super close overtime loss to a judo black belt. And I was so fired up. I was like, I will never lose again. And it also boosted my confidence my competitive days was only high school, 4 years of high school instruction. But I had been wrestling and coaching wrestling since the day I graduated high school. So my confidence was up, and I started training hard. And I tore my ACL in training. And that was really the moment that changed my life and inspired me to become a strength coach, or just to become a coach in general. I was wanting to, in this weird way, save the world of combat athletes and help them train smarter so they wouldn't go through all the disappointments that I went through. And since then, I've just been like possessed. I don't know. I just refuse to lose at anything I do. You know, I've been there before, the losses, so I know that the mindset is the key. So once I had that ACL injury and then I had my ACL repair, it was like I started this mission where I was like going to change the world of training combat athletes. So from the get-go, I started researching business with training, and I started putting out information probably around 2003, maybe even 2004, something like that. It's definitely been well over 10 years that I started creating, you know, ebooks and stuff like that. I mean, I was getting PDF, like Adobe PDF Maker bootleg editions off of eBay, you know, to make a PDF. So it's been a long time.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. So I got a tree from Fast Growing Trees. I had a tree in my front yard that had it cut down, a big giant oak tree, because it died. And I wanted to put a maple tree there, one that turned bright red during the fall. So I found that tree, made sure that it fit the climate that we're at here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Ordered it. A few days later, I got the tree in a box. It's crazy they can send a tree in a box. And I planted it. A few weeks after I planted it, it's already starting to sprout leaves. So I think in a few years, I'm going to have that bright red maple tree that happens in the fall. I'm really looking forward to that. So if you want to try Fast Growing Trees out, this spring they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off with their first purchase when using code manliness at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code manliness at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code manliness. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Texas Pete is the sauce that allows you to sauce like you mean it. Each Texas Pete sauce is packed with a bold, balanced flavor. The signature tanginess is what makes it a legendary hot sauce that can be used on just about anything. You're definitely going to want to try every flavor. The original hot sauce has a famous secret blend of fermented peppers. Their hotter hot sauce is 3 times hotter than the original, and it's not for the faint of heart. They also got a flavor called Sabor by Texas Pete, adds authentic Mexican flavor. And they also have a dust dry seasoning that matches the flavor of the original hot sauce in a flavorful dry rub. But the flavor that I've been enjoying lately is the chop sriracha sauce. It's got chili, garlic, and some tropical tangy notes. It's really good. I love putting on my eggs. Texas Pete, sauce like you mean it. Visit TexasPete.com and use the store locator to find Texas Pete products, as well as purchase sauces and get recipe inspiration. And you can use promo code PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com. That's PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com. Check out the Sriracha Cha Sauce. It's wedding season, and while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now, and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining on the pants. You can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy-to-follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code MANLINESS to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code MANLINESS. Check it out today. Have you ever been to an event where you just had to get the best seats? Like maybe it was a concert for your favorite band, or maybe it was an important game for your favorite team. Well, to do that, you had to, you know, set an alarm to get the tickets as soon as they went on sale. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you are trying to hire for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it.
Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best people fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness, M-A-N-L-I-N-E-S-S. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So tell us about okay, it seems like everything you've been, your life so far with the weight training, when you're a teenager, the wrestling, the bodybuilding, the MMA, you know, the grappling, led up to underground strength training. So, I mean, I guess, what is the underlying philosophy of underground strength training?
Yeah, when I was first asked that question, a guy was interviewing me, and he's like, describe what you guys do. And at the time, the big fad was this quote-unquote functional training, where everybody had to train on a stability ball, or you had to train on an unstable surface, or you were using all these expensive cable pulleys, and you know, everything was just circus tricks. I mean, it was just crazy. And I wasn't doing that at all. You know, I had guys swinging sledgehammers. I had them chopping wood. I had tree logs in the backyard where we would carry them, squat them. We were climbing ropes that were slung around trees. We were lifting stones. I mean, pushing trucks. And I just felt like we didn't follow any of those rules, you know, and many of the popular coaches back then, they laughed at me. You know, they were like, you know, that's some stupid stuff. That guy's an idiot. And I think if I was younger, I would have cowered to that, and I would have, you know, had my lack of confidence. But I was like, you know what? Look at our results. You can't argue with our results. The kids that I was training, the athletes, they were coming to me weak. They were not winning wrestling matches. They were not starting on the football team at all. I mean, some of them were, you know, one kid broke a collarbone. He was so weak. And I started churning out kids that became all area football players, all state wrestlers, state champ wrestlers, all American wrestlers. And I looked at it like we weren't following the rules of what the norm was. But now the way I look at it is I just don't discriminate against anything that can make you stronger, faster, tougher. So I'm not the guy that says you only use kettlebells, you only use powerlifting. I feel like that's just a closed-minded way. It's an arrogant, you know, way to think. I look at what is the best thing for this individual physically as well as emotionally. So the training I do is a blend of physical and mental, but we use all training tools from free weights to kettlebells to dumbbells to odd objects like, you know, tires and, you know, all kinds of different shape and size sandbags, stones. So when you see our training, you'll notice a wide variety of implements being used. And I found that it's great because it not just gets them physically stronger, but man, it gets people tough. It gets people tough. And even for people think, oh, he's just training high school athletes. I've got a good amount of adults that train with me, and it makes them tougher in life. It's just like they apply the struggles through our training and they become more successful in life because they're able to kind of look at life and lifting as the same. It makes them stronger. It teaches them how to handle obstacles from work and things like that. So underground is really just not discriminating against the tools or the methods that deliver results. So I'm really open-minded, and it's always evolving, constantly evolving. I think people are misconstrued with it because they feel like there's not a lot of science behind our training, which there is. There's a lot of science, but the most important thing is it's all application, because certain things look really good in these scientific training manuals written by, you know, doctors of exercise science, but they don't always hold true when you're actually training a group of athletes or a specific athlete, or sometimes those scientific, you know, I don't know if I want to call them rules, but those scientific theories, they may apply better for one sport than they do for another sport. So there's a lot of things that I look at when I'm training, and I really individualize training for the person, for their needs, whether it's sport, life, whether it's the mental aspect that they need. You know, I blend a lot of it together. So I don't just learn and incorporate stuff from the strength and conditioning world, but I also, a lot of people who follow me know I'm very much connected to the military, especially, you know, the elite forces of how they train. And I blend a lot of those things into what we do to maximize our results. That's what it's about, results.
All right. So you got, you're flipping through the book. You see a lot of like just cool exercises, like, yeah, splitting wood, the sledgehammer, tire pulls, but you also have squats, shoulder press, you know, the barbell exercise as well. I mean, is there any type of programming with it? Or, I mean, how does, you know, if someone were to do this, like, how would they decide, like, what they should do and for, like, how long? I mean, what's the programming behind it?
So in the book, I didn't just give – I gave sample workouts, broke them down into, like, sample beginner workouts, sample intermediate, sample advanced workouts. But leading up to that, I write about blending science with hell, you know, blending kind of like this good training program that kind of follows the rules along with – things that are going to test your mental toughness, that are going to push you physically outside of your comfort zone to help you grow, not just physically, but grow in your mentality. And even on a deeper level, you know, the warrior spirit that Mark Divine talks about from Seal Fit. So when we train, some of our workouts could be full body workouts. Sometimes they're focused more upper body or focused more on lower body, but you know, a lot of our workouts, you know, if you come and see our gym, see our guys training of all ages, we start with a warm-up. It's a blend of just movement. Sometimes it's got gymnastic drills like tumbling and cartwheels. Other times it's got some light bodybuilding work in there like dumbbell benching and maybe kettlebell clean and press or some light kettlebell snatches, sled drags. So we're utilizing programming that is a blend of building strength, building muscle, and overall athleticism. So is there a program to follow? Yes, but I never give a blanket program and say, this is what everybody needs. It all starts with, when I'm training people, how do they move? You know, you might be very strong. You could deadlift 405, bench 315, but you can't do a push-up with, unless your feet, your hands are elevated, or you can't do a lunge. You don't have the unilateral leg strength or the stability in your ankles, knees, and hips to push yourself off one leg. So I look at those things before I determine this is the workout that everybody has to follow. You know, to me, I want to see people having general fitness. You've got to be in shape. If you're all the way on one end of the spectrum, very, very conditioned, but then very weak, I'm not a fan of that. Or if you're very, very strong, but you're winded when you got to walk up a flight of stairs, or you can't play with your kids because, you know, you're too big. Like, I don't like to see those things unless really that's your area of focus. You know, if you're a powerlifter, maybe that's where you're going to be. You know, you got to chase the extremes. If you're a all-out ultra marathoner, you may not have a lot of strength, although I think many of them are kind of learning that, you know, you don't have to be weak and also be to be an ultra runner or ultra swimmer or any of that stuff. So there's no set plan until I see that person move, because movement to me is number one. If you move like, I want to fix that first and foremost.
You bring up an interesting point there about the difference between athleticism and strength. I mean, what is that difference? And if you're just an average Joe Schmo, like, right, you know, I'm married, dad, I don't really play sports anymore except for the occasional pickup basketball game. Like, why should I be athletic?
Well, an occasional pickup basketball game is where a lot of unathletic guys, you know, start getting hurt, like tearing ACLs or jamming up their ankle. Oh, I jumped and I rolled my ankle. And you hear this shit all the time. But what's unique is, you know, I look back to my high school days. I don't ever recall a kid saying, I tore my ACL, I've got to get ACL surgery. Nobody told me they were getting Tommy John surgery. There's no such thing as little leaguer's elbow. These are all words that have been created because of overuse and overspecialization. So there's a lack of balance. So when I tore my ACL, you know, looking back at those days, was my training program was bodybuilding, leg extensions, and not really doing too much machines, not enough stability work, poor mobility. So my body just was, you know, if it was put in a compromised position, my joints were not prepared for it. And the reason why the body gets hurt is because it's not prepared for what you're doing. So athleticism, you know, I look at it as a blend, having strength, the ability to move, to be healthy, to be able to handle whatever it is that you're doing. So if you're a power lifter and you don't have kids to play with and you're not playing pickup games, then your athleticism and your health won't really be challenged because you just know how to go to the gym and squat heavy and deadlift heavy. And things are different for guys like you and I who become fathers. You start looking at your training differently. You know, I remember when I strained my lower back and my back was killing me while I was giving my daughter a bath. You know, she was a baby. She was a couple months old. And that was the first time I started saying, like, screw this. You know, I'm not going to let my training interfere with being a dad. And, you know, so when I look at athleticism, I don't look at it in relation to a sport. I look at it in relation to your life. So if your training is messing up your life, then we've got a problem. Unless, of course, you're zoned in. If you're training for the Olympics, then your life is the preparation. You know, Joe DeSena always talks about that. I'm not sure what rowing team, what country they're from, but they had that blog called "Will It Make the Boat Go Faster?" And they were like, "Hey, you guys want to go see a movie tonight?" And they say, "Will it make the boat go faster?" They say, "No, all right, we're not going to the movies." You know, that's when you're in the zone and you're being extreme. But when you become a parent, your view of training, whether you like it or not, it has to change. You need to be healthier. You need to be able to play with your kids. You need to be able to balance your training and not be on the extremes of basically beating the crap out of your body where you're unable to function with playing with your kids. And as you said, it doesn't have to be a pickup game of basketball. What if the kids out front want to play soccer or you go bike riding? You want to be able to do those things. And to me, that's the most important thing to me. It just, I don't care how much I squat, bench, or deadlift anymore, although I'm inspired to always lift heavier. I change my training anytime I feel that it's interfering with being a great father.
Guys who are listening to this podcast right now, what can they start doing today to apply the philosophy of underground strength in their own life?
I say, don't be afraid to get uncomfortable. So if you're always going to the Globo gym, that's, you know, got the air conditioning or the heat and it's got the TVs, then one day I want you to go to the local playground and get going with your hands on the monkey bars, on the parallel bars. Go and find a stone and just carry it as long as you can, or do clean and presses with the stone. Put the car in neutral and push it across the empty parking lot a couple of times. Go out and train in a way that takes your body out of its normal realm of training. And you'll start developing a much more unique style of training. And you're also going to feel like your mind is evolving differently. You know, we guys like you and I with, you know, Art of Manliness, and we talk about the confidence factor and being tougher. That kind of training in this unique way, it breeds self-confidence. You just feel like you have a bit of that alpha male going on inside of you because you're like, all right, I know I'm not checking my cell phone in between sets. I'm not looking in the mirror. I'm not relying on the music that's going through the gym to motivate me. I'm outside training amongst Mother Nature, whether it's hot or cold out. And you start to get a little bit of that edge. And that is important. Man should never lose that edge. And that's something that you can train to acquire. And you could also lose it by training and really living the wrong way, living in a way that doesn't make you uncomfortable. And that's a scary place for me. I don't ever, you know, when I find myself getting a little comfortable, that's when I make sure I go and train outside. You know, I own two gyms, and especially when the weather's nicer, but even in the winter, I make sure I get outside and do some training. Yesterday was a nice snowstorm here. I got to the park with my kids. I was sprinting with them as they sat in the sleighs. I was chasing them. We're up and down on the playground, and in between chasing them, I hopped up on the bars and did dips. And doing that stuff just, it puts my mind in a different place. I start saying in the back of my head, like, yes, this is strong, you know, training while the snow is blowing and nobody else is, you know, out here training like this in the cold. It gives you a great confidence factor. And then I take that confidence and I apply it to my work in all factors of work, whether it's, you know, my writing or my online or, you know, being willing to do the things that other gym owners aren't willing to do. That kind of training, I just call it get comfortable being uncomfortable.
I'm going to put this out there. Monkey bars hurt. Don't be deceived. Like, I remember I did some playground workout and I'm going to do the monkey bars. I hadn't done monkey bars since I was in elementary school. Man, that is really uncomfortable. Like, it hurts your shoulders. Like, man, it's a workout.
Yeah, it's just because we're not 50 pounds anymore.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Right? Yeah.
So it's, you're bigger, so using your body weight becomes much more challenging. And that stuff's important. You want to be able to move your own body. I'm a big believer in body weight and calisthenics style training before you're trying to lift the weights. I want to see guys that could do push-ups, jumping, sprinting, pull-ups, dips. I want to see all men being able to do that.
Awesome. Well, Zach, where can people find out more about your work?
Easiest way is go to undergroundstrength.tv. And if you just Google Underground Strength Coach, they'll see, wow, the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram, all the YouTube videos. We've got, I think, over 1,700 YouTube videos with training, mindset, lots of stuff that could be easily applied. But undergroundstrength.tv would be great. And the Strong Life podcast, they could find that as well on the blog.
Awesome. Well, Zach Evanesh, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Cool. Thank you, Brett. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Our guest today was Zach Evanesh. He is the author of the book Underground Strength, and you can find that on Amazon.com. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. And if you enjoyed this podcast, really appreciate it if you give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, whatever it is you use to listen to your podcast. And also recommend us to your friends if you think it's worth that. That's the greatest compliment you can give us. Anyways, until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.